going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Hour number 3 of the Rob Brown Show starts now. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you talk in a bunch of draft this week, as it is draft week here on the show. NFL Christmas is Thursday evening, 59 hours, 58 minutes until the Tennessee Titans are officially on the clock. That means 59 hours and, I don't know, 59 minutes and 30 seconds until Cam Ward is selected as the number one overall pick. I was just kind of spitballing some draft takes for you there on the way out. And a texter sent the text during the break to the Hub City Spartanburger text line at 844-326-3663. Your thoughts are wanted on the show this morning. You can also use that number to call in to be a part of the program or join us on our live stream at facebook.com/thefanupstate, the Fan Upstate on Twitter, the Fan Upstate on YouTube, or the Rob Brown Show on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitch. Search us, subscribe to us, and join us every day from 6 till 10 a.m. right here on the show. A lot of you guys have offered some thoughts so far. I want to address some of them as we move ever closer to the draft. Texter said, hey, Rob, the obvious pick is the correct pick. And I don't disagree. 90% of the time when I fill out my mock drafts, I go with the obvious pick. Here's the problem with that this year more than most years. And Lonzo pointed out in the last segment that this year's draft, it does feel more compelling than the last couple of drafts. And the last couple of drafts didn't really feel that compelling because it kind of felt like the first 7, 8, 9, 10 picks were relatively scripted. You kind of knew, like, these are the positions of need for these teams, and they line up pretty good with the best player available methodology. The big debate every year is, do you draft need or do you draft BPA? And more often than not, and I think people kind of overcomplicate that conversation, more often than not, the answer is kind of a mix of both. You kind of pick the best player on the board that really does suit a need. Or you pick the biggest need with the best player available that fits into that role. And I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I don't think anybody comes in with an exclusively draft by need or exclusively best player available mentality. I think that's one of those things that, and I will acknowledge this is a downfall of my industry, I think a lot of people in this business do their darndest to try to boil every situation in sports down to a black or white, left or right, up or down, backward or forward conversation. Why? Because conflict is inherent if there are only two positions available. If it is either A or B, then there's plenty of conflict. You have to be on A or B. And as is true with most things in real life, most things don't boil down to, this is either that way or that way. Most things in life have a large spectrum of possibility or opportunity in the middle. Most things. And I think that's the case here. So when I look at Cleveland and New York at number two and number three, because I do think that Tennessee is the one team that either has no need for a smokescreen or isn't really laying it on thick. The reality is they don't see the future as Will Levis. Is that fair to Will Levis or not? I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's NFL talent in Will Levis. Do I think the guy's a certified Hall of Famer? No, not really. But I also think that not enough, what's the word I want to look for here? Let's go with blame. Not enough blame is being laid on Tennessee for constructing a not good football team. It just wasn't good. They had one of the worst, I think, bottom three offensive lines last year. Defensively not great. They allowed a lot of players to walk. They switched away from Mike Vrabel. Lonzo and I have had a lot of headbutting over the NFL in last year. One of the things we have absolutely lined up on, both of us think getting rid of and moving on from Mike Vrabel was a mistake.
Absolutely. And New England picking him up, I think, is might turn out to be a really good thing.
Completely agreed. I think New England needed a big time. Now, I do think the quick hiring and firing of Jerod Mayo, here's the reality. I don't know that we have a large enough sample size to say that the Jerod Mayo hiring and firing was a mistake for the Patriots. I think the Patriots wanted to lay some blame because they aren't used to losing. I think they wanted to lay some blame on anybody but the organization for the fact that they were a losing organization. And for Bob Kraft, the easiest way to do that was to lay it on the feet of the guy who followed the guy. Nobody wants to be the guy who follows the guy. Nobody wants to be the dude who follows the dude because you're expected to be the dude just like the dude was the dude. Ain't nobody going to be the dude the way that Belichick was the dude. And again, I've made my belief on Belichick well known. I mean, Belichick's a good coach. Do I think Belichick was like A1 great all time? Honestly, no, I don't. I think he's very, very good. I think he had the benefit of having the greatest quarterback of all time with him for 20 plus years in New England. I think it was good. I think it was good enough to understand what he had in Tom Brady and to work, massage the football team around him.
Will you change your mind if he wins the ACC?
No, because he's coaching college football.
Okay.
And also, apparently, his 24-year-old girlfriend is coaching college football. That's a dramatic story for another segment. Because there's a lot of question marks about what Chapel Bill's doing right now. Again, his program, he has way more power in the college ranks than he did at the NFL. Well, he doesn't.
I don't have a problem with female coaches.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
You did it.
The audacity.
You did it.
The absolute audacity.
You cannot leave something open like that and then walk away from it.
This is the worst thing you've ever done. This is the worst thing you've ever done, Lonzo. The worst thing.
What, pointing out something you did and trying to give you a chance to fix it?
That's not what I said. It's not what I said. We're coming back to this. We're coming back to this. So, I think the Jerod Mayo hiring and firing for New England was the club trying to say to their fan base, we're still those Patriots. You're not. Of course you're not. You lost not just Brady, you lost Belichick too. Of course you're not. It was always going to be a franchise reset. To lay it all on the feet of Jerod Mayo, I thought was kind of gross, to be honest with you. But they ended up with Mike Vrabel. And I agree. I think that's a great pickup. Now, the Tennessee Titans, I think, laid it all on the feet of Will Levis, just like the Patriots laid it all at the feet of Jerod Mayo. Fairly? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Unfair? Yeah, absolutely unfairly. But regardless of whether it's fair or unfair, regardless of whether it's okay or not okay, at the end of the day, they're not in on Will Levis. Cam Ward becomes the guy for them. Do I think it's the right pick? No, not really. But, again, I had a bad year last year with quarterbacks. I thought Bo Nix was a wash. I thought Drake May was a wash. Those two guys were both spectacular. I did not think Jaden Daniels was a wash. I told you he was going to be rookie of the year. Hashtag nailed it. So let's say 1 for 3.
I was going to say, you were all about that.
And I was right about that. So we're only going to focus on my Jaden Daniels projections, not Drake May and Bo Nix. No, we are going to focus on that because accountability matters and not enough people in my industry have it anymore. Putting that aside, I'm just not sold on Cam Ward as the type of dude who rolls in, who takes over a locker room, and who is that guy. And if you're going to start a rookie QB in year one, I think he's got to be that guy. And I just don't see that out of Cam Ward yet. But let's put that aside, because he, to me, feels like the one guarantee in this entire scenario. He feels like the one pick that there's no questions that's going to be their cat. And let's move on to picks number two and three. During that last segment, I said, look, Abdul Carter to number three at New York feels like a layup. It feels like a layup. Abdul Carter is not one of the two Colorado fellas are going to Cleveland. It's either Shador at two or it's Travis Hunter to two. And when a texter says, Rob, most times the obvious pick is the correct pick. I agree with you. But we're talking about the Cleveland Browns. Hey, the Deshaun thing put aside. Because here's the reality. Whether you like it or you don't like it, they were not the only team that was in on Shador San, or excuse me, on Deshaun Watson. The Atlanta Falcons were in on Shador Sanders. My New Orleans Saints were in on Shador Sanders or Deshaun Watson. Why do I keep doing that? Deshaun Watson. There were I believe the Giants were in on Deshaun Watson. And granted, who knows if the Deshaun Watson story ends up differently if he ends up with another franchise. At the end of the day, the Cleveland Browns' history with quarterbacks is lengthy. Not storied, not successful, but lengthy. I've told you this before, but back when I was in, and this was a handful of years ago, back when I was in Florida, I had a buddy named Kellen, big Browns guy. And I had in my garage, I had a beer fridge. And on the side of that beer fridge one day, he put a big piece of duct tape. And he started writing down the names of all of the starting quarterbacks of the Browns over the X amount of years. And that length of duct tape, this was like 2015, 16. That length of duct tape got to be the point that it was like three quarters of my fridge. And he said, Rob Brown, I'm going to keep coming over here and writing names on the Cleveland Browns duct tape of shame until we get a guy. And while we obviously have gone our separate ways, when Deshaun got drafted or got traded for to Cleveland, he wrote me and he's like, this is gross. I don't like it. But I guess if I'm not going to like it, at least we've gotten to the point where I wouldn't have to come write names on duct tape anymore. Turns out that was incorrect. So Deshaun shows up. It goes very sideways. They need a quarterback now. Travis Hunter's not a quarterback. Shador Sanders is. There is only one possible surprise here. And that one possible surprise is Cleveland takes Jackson Dart at number two. But there is absolutely nothing so far to indicate that is a possibility. People aren't even doing that thing where you get like one beat reporter who speculates it and then it becomes the smoke in the wind. And everybody starts going, oh, it's a possibility on the table. It's being talked about on the table. It's not. Then there's the Giants. And again, I said Abdul Carter's the guy. My man Chris Lewis, president of the Greenville Triumph, sent me a text during the break, not to out him, but he said, Dex, Burns, Kayvon, and then Carter. That gets even my exhausted, beaten-down Giants fans' ass excited. To which I said, I don't disagree. That's a disgusting front seven that would scare the feces out of every quarterback in the league. So congratulations on Shador. To which he texted back, exactly, eye roll emoji. I'm so up in the air about that. The obvious pick is often the correct pick. I don't disagree. But when it comes to New York and Cleveland, I'm asking questions with the benefit of hindsight being 2020, which obviously it is. Wasn't the obvious pick, correct me if I'm wrong here, great one, wasn't the obvious pick for the Giants just pay the running back? you know, that guy, Saquon Barkley, who went on to help win the Philadelphia Eagles a Super Bowl champ. You know that guy who had a historic year. Like, you know that guy who didn't set records last year only because he sat on the bench and told his head coach, no, no, let the young guys get theirs. I got mine. I'm good. We know what I am. Let the young guys get some XP, because if something goes sideways and you need them, they need game experience too. Otherwise, he would have had every record this year. He'd have had single season rushing record. He'd have had single game rushing record. He would have had every career number. He would have had probably most touchdowns. He'd have had probably most 20 plus yard carries. He'd have had all of them. But in multiple games, he sat himself down so the young guys could eat a little bit. And here's the best part. At no point did any of us come in here and go, oh, he doesn't want it. He ain't a competitor. He ain't thirsty. He ain't hungry. He's not trying to eat. Which for a lot of running backs, we would have. We'd have rightly criticized him for yanking himself. Not Saquon. Saquon, we went, yeah, of course he's not. Of course he's not a competitor. My man has 200 yards this game. Of course he's got himself a breather. Of course he's earned himself an opportunity to sit. That's Shedeur Sanders. Was the obvious thing, and again, hindsight's 20/20, but I believe at the time when Saquon got let walk and he ended up with Philly, did I not on this microphone, on this show, in this time slot say, hey, the Giants are going to regret that, because this kid is one of the few running backs that is worth paying. He is that good. He is worth paying. There's not a lot of them. I think we probably overinflate how many there are. But he is one of the few, the proud. One of the running backs that's worth the paycheck. The obvious thing was to pay Saquon Barkley. The obvious thing was to pay Saquon Barkley. Doing the obvious thing, first off, let's be clear. Doing the obvious thing is not always the right thing. Obvious and correct are not always correlated. Most of the time they are. Most time, the obvious thing is the right thing. Not always. In that case, the obvious thing was the right thing, and the right thing was the obvious thing. The Giants did not the obvious thing nor the right thing. So for me to sit here and say, with Joe Shane in charge of the New York Football Giants, for me to sit here and say that the Cleveland Browns under Andrew Berry are just going to do the right thing, which is the obvious thing, is not it for me. Which is why the top three picks are, well, the second and third picks are wildly compelling to me. With the second and third picks being absolutely in flux the way that they are, guess what that makes picks 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8? The exact same thing. Because what if Abdul Carter falls? You'd like to think the Patriots are going offensive line. If Abdul Carter comes off the board at 2 or 3, the Patriots are going offensive line. But if they don't, even though they need offensive line, can they pass on Abdul Carter, a guy who absolutely should not fall to 4? I don't know. What if they pass on Abdul Carter? Now all of a sudden you start looking at 5. There's Jacksonville. They need a defensive lineman. But at the same time, could they get a treasure trove of picks from teams that wouldn't pass on Abdul Carter and might be willing to fork over a ton of capital to go get him? And what does that do to Jacksonville? What's that do to Carolina at 8? This draft is wild. All right, we got some more comments on the stream, on the thread, and in the text line. We'll address those and more. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It is the Fan Upstate. So we've talked a bunch about the Giants. We've talked a bunch about the Browns. What does all of that do to and for the Carolina Panthers? Because I got to be honest, I've yet to make it to 8 in the mock draft. I have made it to 4. This has been the most conflicted I've been about a mock in a long time. Because on one hand, there is a part of me for some reason or the next. There's kind of a part of me that in a weird way is pulling for Shedeur Sanders. Because he strikes me as one of these cats. Like, yeah, he definitely has a little bit of edge to him. A little bit of cockiness, if you will. The line between cocky and confident is often determined by how much riz you got. Right? Like, the line between cocky and confident is a very, very gray one. I point to guys like Conor McGregor. There's a lot of people who love Conor McGregor because he's got that edge to him, and a lot of people who hate him, me, because he doesn't just cross that line, he pole vaults over it. The line between the two is very thin. And I can't really blame Shador Sanders for having all that much of an edge to him when he is the son of Deion Sanders, a guy who had all that edge to him, and yet we loved him as a player. Loved him as a guy. How much? In the fortress of nerditude, which Lonzo and I share, there are 3 autographs hanging on the wall. Of all my sports autographs, and I got a few because I, as a kid, I don't anymore as an adult, but as a kid, I lived for autographs, lived for them. I got a handful. Some I'm very proud of. Steve Garvey is at the house. Greg Maddux is at the house. I got a bunch. There are 3 that hang on the wall in there. One of them is Ken Griffey Jr., my favorite baseball player of all time. One of them is Archie Manning, my favorite quarterback of all time. And one of them is Deion Sanders. And not only do I have a Deion Sanders autograph hanging on the wall, because I was, as just about everyone my age was, a big Neon Deion fan. Not only do I have a Deion Sanders autograph hanging on the wall, I have a Dallas Cowboys photo of Deion Sanders autographed by Deion Sanders hanging on the wall. Do you understand the level of love I have to have for you to hang one piece of Dallas Cowboy paraphernalia on the wall in the Fortress of Nerditude? I love Deion Sanders. And part of the reason we love Deion was because he was a massive trash talker, but he backed it up. He was super cocky, but he was cocky because you couldn't stop him. He could score a tutty in the daytime and hit a dinger at night. That was Deion Sanders. So it doesn't shock me that Shador Sanders has a little bit of swagger to him. And the more I watch, the more I see people dinging him for that. To the point that we're making a huge deal out of Shador pats the football when he drops back to pass. When he's going to pass, it's a pat-pat. When he's not going to pass, he doesn't pat, but when he's going to pass, pat-pat. And that became like a huge story for like 2 days. And I sincerely racked my brain. I'm like, has any other college quarterback taken that much heat for that? I'm not talking about mechanics. I'm talking about that little of a thing, right? Tim Tebow took a bunch of crap because of his throwing motion. That, to me, valid and justified. Said that coming into the league. The problem you have with Tebow was on the throw, the hand drops all the way down to the hip and comes all the way over the top. That's too long of a throwing motion. You got to get the arm back, get the ball at helmet level, fire that thing out of there. And if you can't do that with speed and force behind it, you can't quarterback at the next level. That's just how it is. Sorry. That's just how it works. Kenny Pickett got busted up about what? He has small hands. That's fair and valid. I got to have a quarterback with ball security. I got to know that if you get rocked by Abdul Carter and you got one hand on the ball in the throwing motion, I can trust you to tuck rule that thing down into the breadbasket and hang on. And don't drop the ball when you're going for the ride. That's a legitimate thing. Shador patting the ball is not a break for me in the make or break scale. It's not a break for me. If it genuinely is a tell for Shador Sanders, number one, as I've said before, Drew Brees patted the ball. Tom Brady patted the ball. That's a relatively common thing. And if the argument is that Shador Sanders pats the ball and that's his tell that it's going to be a throw, or that it's the next reads the throw, right? If it's look, look, pat, pat, throw. If it's look, 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 pat, pat, throw. Or if it's look, pat, pat, throw. Then yeah, guess what I can do? I can coach that out of him. In fact, I don't even guess it's that complicated. If I'm the quarterback's coach, every time I see Shador in the hallway, I'm underhand spiraling the football, and I'm teaching him, every time the ball hits your hands, pat-pat. Every time you touch a football, pat-pat. I don't care if it's the middle of the day, you're in your lunch break, you take a bite of your ham Sammy, you put it back on the tray, I'm spinning you a football, pat-pat. Every time. I want to ingrain it into you as second nature. Pat. Every time. Or I coach the Pat out. Now, again, there's a reason quarterbacks Pat. We've talked about this. Quarterback Pat. I don't know how many times I'm going to say Pat. At least one more. Every time the ball hits your hand, Pat. And I want that. Quarterbacks go to Pat. And they're going to Pat because what? They use the offhand to make sure they've got as much friction on the football as they can get with their throwing hand. I want that thing tucked into that hand as securely as possible. Why? The more contact, the more pressure there is on the ball, the more when that hand comes out and that wrist snaps, they can get that ball end over end, creating that nice tight spiral. Pat. Second nature. Every time you touch a ball. I am waking Shador up. The alarm goes off at 5:15 in the morning for Cam. As soon as he opens his eyes, I'm putting a football in the hands. Pat. You start your day with a pat. You end your day with a pat. The middle of your day, pat. Lunch break, pat. Nap time, pat when you go to sleep, pat when you wake up. Pat. That's what I'm going. I can coach that out of them. If that's the biggest complaint you got, I can work with that. And so in a weird way, I'm kind of pulling for Shador. I'm especially pulling for Shador when I'm watching big name mocks drop him out of the first round. But put all that aside, how does all of this impact the Panthers? The answer is, I don't know. Because everything I think can happen with Cleveland 2 or 3 spirals off to 4 or 5 options for the Giants. And everything the Giants do spirals off into a handful of others. Again, if Abdul Carter comes off the board 3 at New York, then I think New England's going Will Campbell, the tackle out of LSU at 4. If they don't, if they go Shador, then Will Campbell's off the board. So what does Jacksonville do? Is it Armand Membo out of Tennessee? Do they decide that they want to be the first team with a defensive end? Do they end up going to get the kid out of Michigan? Mason Graham? I got Mason Graham graded out at around a middle of the first round pick. I think he's very good, but I don't know if 4 is too high to New England. I don't know if he drops off to 5 at Jacksonville. Jacksonville needs a running back. Could they go with Ashton Jante at 5 and pair him up and create that backfield of doom between him and Etienne behind Trevor Lawrence? Do they say, no, we trust that Etienne's going to be just fine, skip on Jante? And if so, did they go with an offensive lineman? My answer would be yeah. To me, Jacksonville's got to go offensive lineman. But what if they don't? What if they end up going with Tyler Warren, the tight end? Let's give Trevor Lawrence one more tool, right? It's a make or break year for TL16. Regardless of how we feel about the outcome, I think Zoe and I both agree this is TL16's make or break year as a quarterback, right? If he doesn't get it done this year, regardless of coaches, staff, personnel, whatever, if TL16 doesn't look like a franchise quarterback this year, they move on.
Yeah, they definitely move on. It doesn't mean he won't get a shot somewhere else and maybe redeem himself, but I don't know.
And it's possible that he has his Baker Mayfield moment where he gets out of there, he goes somewhere else, he goes on, he has a hell of a season, and we all go, maybe it was the Jags. As I've said many times, sometimes it's the franchise, not the quarterback. But it's his make or break year in Jacksonville to prove it's correct. So do they go offensive line? The point here is this. I think we could sit here and speculate all day about what happens with Carolina. But I'm going to tell you, on one hand, I love everything Dan Morgan has led up to this draft with. I like the conversation. I like the smoke screens. I like the way he's set up for different pieces and different picks. I like the way he's opened up the roster. I like the way he said BPA can draft with knee but still BPA. I like everything Dan Morgan's done in the lead up to this draft, and I do not envy him. Because I think Dan Morgan probably has a playbook with 50 contingency plans in place right now. I think Dan Morgan has a playbook with a flow chart of if A, then B, if B, then C, if C, then D. A playbook of them. Because there's 90 possible combinations that lead up to Carolina at 8. My gut is... It's Jalen Walker unless for some reason Abdul Carter falls to 8. He's not going to. I've seen a lot of mocks with them getting Tyler Warren out of Penn State. I don't need him. You got plenty of tight ends in the roster right now. I've seen a couple where they go with Tet McMillan out of Arizona State. I'd love a wide receiver. I don't think that's the guy. I think Jalen Walker, the edge rusher out of Georgia, is the spot. Put him upside with Derrick Brown and let's start to build a defensive front 7 in the Dan Morgan mentality. But the reality is, There's 95 potential different ways that the first three picks could go. That could change everything Carolina has planned to date. All right, let's get away from draft talk. Let's talk some NBA when we come back. Playoffs underway, some interesting series playing out. It's the Rob Brown Show. It's the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, Kawhi Leonard. Why not? 39 points. The Clips get the Nugs last night, 105-102. That series is tied up 1-1. Let's go with the NBA playoff bracket here for just a second. The Thunder and the Grizz, Oklahoma City leads Memphis in a series that was, honestly, it was, to me, the least contentious coming into the series. Like, this was a no-doubter. I think Miami might give Cleveland a game or two. Like, I think we're probably talking gentleman's sweep over there. Maybe Miami can steal a second somewhere with, like, a real big Tyler Hero game. I don't think the Grizzlies are winning a game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. That first game was one of the ugliest I've seen in a very long time. Memphis gets shellacked 131-80. I'm not a big math guy, but that, I believe, easy math, 80, so you add 20 to get to 100, and then you add the 31. That's a 51-point shellacking. I don't know what to say about that series other than it's going to get real ugly real quick. All five Memphis starters had double digits, and Aaron Wiggins off the bench had 21. For the Grizz, Ja had 17. No, in an NBA game, nobody else got to double digits. It's as bad as it gets. I don't really think we need to spend a ton of time on that series. I think the Thunder are sweeping that one, and it's not going to be close. How about the T-Wolves getting one over on the Lakers? This one is interesting. 117-95 in game one.
It was kind of a beatdown.
And keep in mind, I'm a believer in the current Lakers, not the future Lakers with Luka. I'm a believer in the current Lakers. I got a bet slip out on the Lakers making the Western Conference Finals, but they got work to do now. And what's interesting about this game, LeBron had 19. They were minus 22 with LeBron on the floor. Plus minus stat is my most important stat in the NBA that nobody really pays attention to. The plus minus stat, which is, of course, cumulative points while you are on the floor as an individual. Everybody has their own plus minus stat. What was the difference in the teams when you were on the floor? And your plus minus and what I'm looking for out of your plus minus is going to be determined largely by your role on the team. For a bench player, I just want a plus minus that's around zero, right? If you are a bench player, I would love a plus minus. I'll take a zero. Out of my starters, I got to have it at least be plus. Unless it's just one of those nights. Here's the problem. That doesn't feel like it was an anomaly of a night to me, right? Like, that doesn't feel like you look at that game and you go, oh, the Lakers had an off night. Luka had 37 on 12 of 22. LeBron had 19. Austin Reeves had 16. It didn't feel like a plus-minus night. You know what it felt like to me? It felt like the number one concern that I had about this Lakers team, which is they made the move to go get the big guy out of Charlotte. The move fell apart after the trade was nixed due to failed physicals. Whatever. In that moment, I went, the Lakers still got to find a big man. Because if they don't find a big man, they're going to be in trouble. They got themselves into trouble. Jackson Hayes was 0 for 2 from the floor. He was 1 of 2 from the stripe for his only point. Here's the most important number. Of the five starters for the Lakers, Hachimura had 5 boards. LeBron had 5 boards. Luka had 8 boards. Austin Reeves had 3 boards. Jackson Hayes had 3 rebounds. Jackson Hayes, my starting center, a 7-foot-tall, 220-pounder. Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of cheeks to him. All right? He ain't a big boy, but he's 7 feet tall, and you can't teach that. Had 3 rebounds in this game. I'm not asking you to do anything special here. He had 3 rebounds. Rudy Gobert is a good defensive player. He's got 1 inch and 28 pounds on Jackson Hayes. Hey, he's bigger. He's thicker with 2 C's than Jackson Hayes. But let's not pretend Rudy Gobert is some monster in the middle. He's a great defensive big man. He is not an incredible rebounder. Like, he's a good enough rebounder. Rudy Gobert is not known for his rebounding prowess. He did average 11 boards a game, but he, especially in this game, he wasn't cleaning the glass. Rudy Gobert had 6 boards. He's a good rebounder, not a great rebounder. Just to be clear, Jaden McDaniels, a 6'9" power forward, had more boards than Rudy Gobert and Jackson Hayes. This was very simple to me. LA, if they are undone, and again, my thought was Luka playing the one, LeBron playing his natural position of a 3-4 hybrid, they can cover up no big man. But with Rudy Gobert playing defense, they have to be exceptional from the outside. They shot less than 40% from the floor. If the Lakers are going to win the series, they got to shoot 45% from the floor. If they are going to have Jackson Hayes give me 8 minutes, go 0 of 2 and score a single point, I've got to have somebody else that's going to step up and get, like, you've got to give me something else. There is one more piece I'd really like to see. And I knew the minutes were going to come down because he plays a less experienced, less talented version of Luka Doncic. What happened to Dalton Connect? What happened to Dalton? Why have we erased Dalton Connect from this lineup? My guy played 3 minutes in this game. My dude had, respectfully, of course. Why is Dalton Connect getting the same number of minutes as Bronny James? When he has clearly shown he's a better player. I understand he plays Luka's position. But why is Dalton Connect getting 3 minutes in this game? And Bronny James is getting those same 3 minutes. Why is Jordan Goodwin getting 9 minutes in this game when Dalton Connect's getting 3 minutes in the game? Is there something wrong with Dalton Connect that I'm unaware of?
There's a reason why they were trading him.
I mean, I guess. Well, yes. The reason they were trading him was because they found their 7-footer in the middle who was more consistent than Jackson Hayes. And that is, as much as I loved, and I love Dalton Connect, I feel about Dalton Connect the way that you felt about Austin Reeves coming into this year. I love this kid. I think this kid has everything needed to be a stud. But the Lakers' one big kryptonite was they don't have a 5. They just don't have it. Jackson Hayes can have flashes of greatness, but he is not a good 5, or at least not consistently enough to consider him a piece that can win you a chip. I am, as much as I love Dalton Connect, I am willing to give up Dalton Connect if it gave me a 7-foot reliable 5, or at least a 7-footer that I can pair in tandem with Jackson and believe I'm getting a good 1-2 punch, right, where there's never a spot where I don't have at least a moderate player on the court.
I looked it up because I was curious. Dalton Connect averaged 19.2 minutes per game during the regular season.
Uh-huh. He got 3. They lost 117-95.
Well, this is one game. I mean, so the next game, and they were getting their butts beat the entire game. So it wasn't like it was that competitive.
Again, don't disagree. But they were up. Okay, let's start with this. They were up 7 at the end of the first quarter. They were down 9 at the half. An NBA game, down 9 at the half is far from over, right?
That's 3 shots, yeah.
Yeah. Now, it got away from a little bit. They were down, I think, 14 at the end of the third. Even still, down 14 at the start of the fourth quarter ain't over.
What kind of defense does Dalton Connect play?
Good, but hustle monster. He's giving you three or four steals. Just because I'm curious, let's check his regular season averages. I'm curious. 2004-2005 regular season stats. 9.1 points per game.
24-25.
Oh, sorry, 24-25. What did I say, 23-24?
No, you said 4-5, which I'm not sure. I don't think he's alive.
Yeah, 24-25.
Yeah, you know.
Let's see here. He was born in 2001.
All right, so he was, I mean, that he might have had decent averages then. Yeah, you know.
Maybe I will start that just for menning the beard. What do you think? Got the.
You think it's going to help other stuff if you do that? I don't know.
It's right there. I don't know. Did you see George Clooney showing up on social media this weekend? My dude, George Clooney went the just for all the men treatment. Dude showed up with the haircut and color of a 22-year-old. I mean, it was boy. They brought him on set. It's for a role he's doing, but he was on one of the talk shows, and they're like it was so obvious. One of the talk shows awkwardly was like, "Can we talk about your hair?" And he was like, "Yeah, no, I hate it. I look dumb." They were like, "No, you look great, George." He's like, "No, I look like an idiot." And he was right. It looked bad. Remember when Cena showed up for a hot minute with the full hair job? It was like that.
Well, he just said on McAfee that he got hair plugs. So, I mean, I got to believe him.
Hey, own it, man. You're in Hollywood now. Dalton Connect in the regular season was giving you about a steal a game. About a steal a game on defense. Not great. Not unimpressive. About 0.8 steals per game. So about a steal a game. In 9-plus minutes, he got 3. Again, I'm probably making a big deal out of like the fifth most important big deal here. But here's the kicker, and it is real simple. This is the part where the number one concern I had for LA, which is what do you do when you don't have a big man, came into play. They don't have a big man. They got their butt kicked in the paint. They lost the game. It every now and then, you look at one of these games, and I was watching the, inside the NBA as I'm enjoying my last little fix before they go bye-bye. I was watching all the social media analysts after this game was over. Did we overestimate the Lakers? Not really. Here's the reality. Luka can be Luka. Braun can be Braun. If you get your butt whooped in the paint, you get your butt whooped in the paint. Now my question is, how do you play around Rudy Gobert? Gobert.
And if I recall, Minnesota was killing it on the three-point.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, is that they're going to be shooting 40% from range. You damn sure better make sure you're out rebounding them, right? Like, you cannot lose the rebounding battle. So if I got a 7-footer in the middle who's giving me 3 rebounds, that ain't it, Chief. That's not going to do it. You have got to out-rebound them if they're shooting that well. Rockets, Warriors, the Golden State Dubs are up 1. And once again, no surprise to anybody at all, it's because Jimmy playoff bleeping buckets. It really is that simple. Y'all thought I was overplaying my hand when I went in and said, I like Houston. I like Jalen Green. I like this young team they built. I like Amen Thompson. The only thing I don't like is Dylan Brooks. Emphasis on the D and the B in his name. I like Sengun. I don't even hate Fred VanVleet as much crap as hating ass Mario gives him. I like the Rockets. Playoff Jimmy's a different breed of cat. 25 points, 10 of 19. More importantly, Steph Curry was once again hitting video game shots. It's real simple. The one thing that Golden State did not have in the regular season, and I called this out, and I called it out the minute Jimmy Butler got to this team. Do you know what Jimmy Buckets does for this? This is why I do not care what you say. Jimmy Buckets was the trade line win in the NBA. Why? Because Jimmy Butler opens the floor for Steph Curry to be Steph Curry. And when Steph is hitting knockback timeline shots, when you are locking Steph Curry down, and he, the only player in the NBA that I am okay with, taking a fadeaway, out of bounds, one-handed, off-balance look at the three, and he is knocking them down. When dude is giving me 15 points in threes and 4 of them are video game shots that no other player in the league should even think about taking, it is because Jimmy Butler opened up the floor. That's why I have Golden State winning this series. They are up 1-0 on Houston. And again, I like the Rockets in the direction they're heading in. They may be the model of how to build a team around a couple of very good young players. But the Dubs are the Dubs, and the Dubs with Jimmy Buckets being playoff Jimmy is untouchable. It just is. Pacers up 1-0 on the Bucks. We'll evaluate that series further. Knicks-Pistons might be the most fun series in the NBA. I don't think the Celtics Magic are going to be a series. I think that's a gentleman's sweep at the best. Again, I like Orlando. Same with Houston. Good team.
I found myself rooting for the Knicks because someone has become such a big Detroit fan, and I just can't root for anything that someone is just going nuts on social media about.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's all give a snappy salute to Colonel Grudge. This Knicks-Pistons series, you know what it feels like to me? It feels very old school rivalry. This feels Bad Boys versus the throwback Knicks. Two teams that are just beating the dog snot out of each other and ain't going to stop. There is not going to be a game with bigger than a 2-point spread in this entire series, I don't think. Pistons get the first one, 123-112. Knicks get it back. Knicks get the first one, 123-112. Pistons get it back, 194 in game number two. The name I said over and over and over and over and over and over coming into these playoffs was Cade Cunningham. 11 of 21, 33 points in the win. Jalen Brunson is a dog. I need better out of Cat. Karl Anthony Towns, who has got the narrative of not a playoff player, Cat's got to step it up. 10 points ain't it. 10 points ain't in when you've got the opportunity against the team that has a mediocre paint game. I need more from the big cat. That's not going to get it for me. This series could be fun, though. All right, we'll talk some more later, NBA later on. I got some NHL playoff updates. Still got it back to the Braves. 4-game win streak. Can they uphold it tonight against the St. Louis Cardinals and take 2 out of 3? We'll talk about that, but not give you any details about it at all, because that's what Lonzo's going to do in his sports flash.
Switch the stories up, because you just did, and then the one I'm going to start with, you do that. Why? I mean, I get you're supposed to tease, but still. It's 4 wins in a row, in case you didn't know, for the Atlanta Braves, fresh off of sweeping a three-gamer over Minnesota. The Braves bested the Cardinals last night 7-6. The Braves had 8 hits, including the 2-run shot from Austin Riley and a 3-run homer from Sean Murphy. Game 2 is tonight at 7:15. The Clippers and Nuggets are tied at a game apiece after 105-102 LA win last night. Kawhi Leonard had 39 on 15 of 19 shooting. And 4 or 5 Clippers starters had double digits. Nikola Jokic had 26, 12, and 10 for a triple-double in the loss. Game 3 is Thursday night. 4 NHL playoff games took place last night. The Capitals took a 1-0 series lead with a 3-2 win over the Canadiens. The Jets beat the Blues 2-1. Stars over Colorado 1-1.